Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivinoda Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Sukanya, however, being very proud of her chastity, smiled upon hearing the remarks of her father. She smilingly told him, "My dear father, this young man by my side is your actual son-in-law, the great sage Chaivanya, who was born in the family of Bhrigu." Purport. Although the father chastised the daughter, assuming that she had accepted another husband, the daughter knew that she was completely honest and chaste, and therefore she was smiling. When she explained that her husband Chaivanya Muni had now been transformed into a young man, she was very proud of her chastity, and thus she smiled as she talked with her father. Om Agyana Tribhanandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chakshus Unmritam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Panchakalpatruvyasya Kripa Sindhu Vyasya Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnabhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasadi Ghor Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, there's not much what Prabhupada has to say about this verse, but basically, the story which we are studying in the Srimad Bhagavatam is about the marriage of Sukanya and Chaivanya Muni. Now, of course, the previous chapter is explaining the dynasty of Manu, and is continuing the continuation of the Manu's dynasty in the successive progenies. So here it is mentioned in this particular verse that one of the sons of Manu was very much indeed following the principles of Dharma, and therefore he was very concerned that at the appropriate time, when the daughter was of age of marriage, he would betroth his daughter to an ideal candidate who would be a worthy husband. Now, of course, what do we mean by a worthy husband? One who provides you with a big home, financial security, or someone who is of a very high caliber in terms of dharma, following the principles of religion. Of course, principle of religion is the highest, because if one has money, tremendous wealth doesn't mean that you may be cultured. We see in this material world today, anybody who is endowed with tremendous wealth is considered a man of importance, man of culture. You know, he may dress very fine, refined clothing of very expensive nature. He may live in a very expensive house. He may have many wonderful material facilities. But that doesn't mean he's cultured. A man living in a simple hut, living very basically, but his thinking is very high. He is of very high morals. Then he's considered a very cultured person. So in Kali Yuga, of course, everything is topsy-turvy, everything is upside down. It's the age of quarrel and hypocrisy, where everything in the opposite side, things is better, and what is considered from a spiritual point of view good is considered unworthy. That is why we see in the present day and age, people are endeavoring for all these material facilities to make themselves feel important. But here, we see the father of Sukanya is giving his daughter in marriage to Chaivanya Muni, who is a great sage, a very austere person, living in very simple conditions, but very highly in his knowledge of the Shastra, knowledge of the scriptures, knowledge about what his duty is towards mankind, what is his duty towards himself. And therefore, Sukanya's father thinks he is a befitting husband, because he will lead her to the righteous path. Of course, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that when women become unchaste, then the progeny which follows that is considered to be Varnashankara, unwanted progeny. And unwanted progeny creates havoc in the society, in the world. So therefore, this section which we are studying now in Srimad Bhagavatam is the beginning of Manu's dynasty, where he's establishing a good progeny, good Prajapati, and people of high caliber. Now sometimes we may wonder, okay, this section of Srimad Bhagavatam is discussing very nice, high morals, high principles, something which is not accepted in today's world, because we're living in the midst of Kali Yuga, in the age of iron, where industrialization is there, and we have different principles, different requirements, different understanding. But I was thinking this morning that Srimad Bhagavatam is a transcendental scripture. It is a narration of the history of mankind, you can say in one sense, or the teachings to the mankind by great sages who are very learned in the scriptures. And when these scriptures were spoken by Vedavyas to enlighten humanity, it wasn't for that particular time. Of course, today, you know, we justify things according to time, place and circumstances. So therefore we say the time is different, circumstances are different, the place is different. Therefore, rules change. But nothing changes. Everything remains the same. Principle of Dharma is perfect at the beginning of creation. It is perfect in the middle of creation. And when the annihilation comes at the end of day of Brahma, still it will be the same. And when the new day of Brahma begins, the same religious principles will again be re-established, as we can understand from the Supreme Lord Himself in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is telling to Arjuna that this knowledge which I am giving to you now is nothing new. This was spoken many, many millenniums before to the sun god. And then he passed down to his son Vivishan, and then Ishvaku, and then came down to the generations. But in time, it was lost, and I am re-establishing it. So it is nothing new Krishna spoke. And therefore, we can conclude from that if we are a little bit of a rational mind, we can say, understand that what Krishna is saying, this knowledge doesn't change according to time, place and circumstances. But how we implement it, that may have some merits according to time, place and circumstances. But the essence, the principle of Dharma doesn't change. Therefore here, Sukanya is betrothed to Chaivanya Muni, who is an ideal husband, who will take care of her. And the progeny which will then come out of the union between the two will be a worthy progeny who will be following the principles of Dharma. And because they follow the principle of Dharma, then all perfection is there. Now, if you go around to the basics, what is the purpose of this material creation? What is the purpose of progeny? What is the purpose of establishing dharmic principles? Of course, the bottom line is, as Prabhupada explains, very simple message, that we have been pushed into this material world due to many material desires which were harboring in our hearts. And therefore Krishna has created a perfect place where we can come and try to fulfill all our material desires. But ultimately Krishna is saying that this is not the highest. The highest, Prabhupada explains, is that we go back to the spiritual world where there is no birth, death, old age, disease, but we are eternally participating in the pastimes of the Lord and enjoying ourselves in a spiritual way, not in the material sense. But when we come to the material world, of course, by Krishna's grace, He has created many different facilities and also many different bodies in which we can enjoy and fulfill all our desires till we are fully satisfied that there is no more hankering for this. And therefore, the next birth, you will elevate it to the higher stage of consciousness. And as you go through the whole different species of life, you come to the highest principle, highest consciousness, which is the human body. And in the human body, when you have got the consciousness of the highest nature, you have the ability to understand the real goal and understand what is your real purpose.
Of course, the real purpose of a living entity is to give pleasure to the Supreme Lord. But how does the living entity give pleasure to the Supreme Lord? Not by being separate from the Supreme Lord. Therefore, the scriptures are guiding us how to become freed from this illusion, come to real understanding. And when we come to the real understanding, then we know what is our real duty. And then real duty is to take up Krishna consciousness. And taking up Krishna consciousness means that we are aware of Krishna's existence, and we also understand what is our relationship with Krishna. Jivere Surupoye Nitya Krishna. So eternally we are servants of Krishna. And when we come to that understanding, then what does a servant of the Lord does? He serves Him. But what is the spirit of serving? The spirit of serving is not that He treats you like a slave. That is slavery. Generally in this material world, when we say we become a servant, that means we are taking the lowest of the lowest position. And the lowest position of a servant is one who is considered like a slave. That you have no independence. You are totally doing things out of force. But here, in the spirit of Dharma and devotion, Krishna is saying nowhere that you have to serve me out of force. He's not interested. Especially in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is giving message after message and is emphasizing that I'm only interested in the relationship which is based on devotion. Of course, Prabhupada translates devotion in many different definitions, and one of them is devotion means love. That you give Krishna your love. You serve Krishna by your love. You serve Krishna, as I said, for His pleasure. And when Krishna derives pleasure by your service, then He is so pleased by that, that He reciprocates with you. That He reciprocates again in return. He doesn't just take your service, but then He also gives you service. And this is the loving bond between the living entity and the Supreme Lord. So, here, when we are studying this section, it is very important that we understand the context in what this is Bhagavatam is saying. And we may say sometimes, as the previous purpose and verses were saying, as we were hearing from different speakers and then listening to the purpose of Srila Prabhupada, that there were a lot of heavy stuff mentioned about one's position. But these are reality. It is not something that it is some scriptures are biased to a particular gender. But it is showing the real position of each entity and what each entity is supposed to do. For example, a lion is thinking one day, why should I behave like a lion? I want to behave like an elephant. So all of a sudden, the lion is walking in the forest, into the fields, like the elephant is majestically walking, and he's thinking, I'm an elephant now. Is it possible? Can a lion act like an elephant? It cannot. And on the other hand, the elephant is thinking, I want to be like a lion. Instead of walking with big body and thumping around and the ground shakes when the elephant walks, you see the lion, they very softly walk when they're hunting. And the prey they're going to hunt doesn't even know that lion is just about to come and jump on it. It's so sophisticatedly walking with light paws. Can it do it? No. In other words, each entity has its own role to play. And therefore, you have been granted that body, as I said, by the mercy of Krishna. He has created this material world, and He has created multiple different bodies in which you can fulfill all your desires according to that body. But within that body, you cannot try to enjoy or replicate another living entity. So similarly, in a human species, we have two genders. We have male and we have female. So Prabhupada, from the very beginning, had clarified the point that in terms of spirituality, there is no difference between a male or a female. When we approach Krishna in the mood of devotion, Krishna doesn't say, look, at that individual entity and says, oh, here's a female devotee and here's a male devotee. Krishna says, here is my devotee. And he doesn't discriminate. He gives equal blessings. He gives equal reciprocation with either male or female. He doesn't discriminate. But at the same time, in as long as we are in this material world and as long as the soul is caught up in this material body, then we have to act according to the body we have. There are certain social rules, regulations which govern how one should act. There are certain biological rules and regulations which governs how one should act. You cannot transgress that. However you don't like it, you cannot transgress. So sometimes people say that we are very unfair to the fairer gender, specifically the females, because in many points it is saying that the women should be very submissive to men. So of course the man is very proud. He says, we have a higher position. Women are our toys. They are here for our enjoyment. Let us enjoy. And you have to be submissive. And as soon as a woman becomes a little bit aggressive, you say, oh, scriptures, dharma. You have to be submissive. So of course, when we preach this message to the general masses, and they say, oh, well, I don't like this business. Krishna consciousness is nice in one sense, that you get freed from the suffering of material world. You get freed from all these anxieties. And at the end, you go back home, back to Godhead, and you're freed from repeated birth and death. I like that part. But this part of submissiveness, I cannot handle this. Of course, when the scriptures are saying that the women must be submissive to men, at the same time, the man also has to be submissive to the woman, but in his role. And what is the role of a man? One who protects. He protects. He doesn't abuse. But because we are so engrossed in this material world and fully controlled by our ego, we think we are the controllers. Therefore, anybody who is lesser than us, we control them. We become controllers. Prabhupada explains, it's very nature in this material world to lord it over material nature. You know, so we are always looking for a position who we can dominate upon. And therefore we feel, yes, now I am someone very special, I am very powerful. And therefore when we are reading in the scriptures where these explanations are given about the role of a woman, the role of a man, we begin to look at it from our materialistic, our egoistic point of view, and how I can use this to my advantage. So one time there was a saying, and many times it is saying actually, that one has to become very, very chaste, very humble, very submissive to one's husband. So of course, the woman said, that is fine. But it is mentioned in the scriptures that if the woman has to become very submissive and very chaste, then the husband also has to be equally a recipient of that honor. In our Vedic custom we say Pati Parmeshwar. Pati Parmeshwar means the husband is considered to be the God or like God. And therefore we must honor him like God and serve him like God. But to be served like God, to be honored like God, you have to become like God. But if you are a debauch, a low class man, then it doesn't work. This is not a one way street. This is a two way street. There's a reciprocation in every aspect. Just like we see, for example, you know, in the relationship of an ideal husband and ideal wife. And the citation is given more mainly about Lord Ramachandra and Mother Sita. Sita is very submissive, very, very chaste to Lord Ram. But on the other hand, Lord Ram is equally concern for the well-being of Sita.
So in other words, if you want to become Pati Parameshwar, you want to become like God and to be treated like God, then you have to become like Ram. You have to develop the qualities of Lord Ramachandra. And if you develop those qualities, then of course you can become a worthy recipient of that honor and respect. So when we are explaining the scriptures for our own understanding, we should have a proper understanding of the concept between the husband and the wife and the relationship they have in terms of religious principles, in terms of our duties and obligations. And when we then promote this to everyone else whom we are preaching about the message of Bhagavatam, the message of Krishna consciousness, then it has to be presented in an ideal way, in a perfect way. But how we can present this in a perfect way is that if we ourselves are perfect, if we are not following the principles of Dharma, how can you propagate the principles of Dharma to others? You know, in other words, the example Prabhupada gives is a person who is smoking a cigarette. And he knows very well through his intellectual understanding that the cigarette is not a very good thing. Smoking is the cause of much suffering, you know, in terms of it messes up your lungs, and you then later on it is the cause of cancer and then suffering and then death. So he knows this thing, but he's smoking. But he's saying that I would advise you do not smoke. And he gives you a whole array of answers why you should not smoke. And the intelligent audience who understand this and say, yes, this makes sense. Smoking should not be done because it is a cause of suffering. But at the end, when the person who is giving this sermon about not smoking is asked this question, what you said is very well and makes perfect sense, but why haven't you given up smoking? So, when I've been smoking since I was 16 and I'm so addicted to that, I try but I cannot give it up. But you have to. Otherwise, how are you going to give the audience who are your persons who are receiving the knowledge and benefit of your understanding? Just like the other example Prabhupada gives is the young boy in a village is so much attached to eating sweets, and he's eating sweets every day, you know, like there is no tomorrow. And the mother is concerned for the well-being for the child, and is thinking that if this child keeps eating so much sweet, the child's teeth will be all rotten by the time he is a teenager, and he won't have any teeth left. And therefore, the rest of his life, he'll be suffering. Because, you know, if you cannot eat good nourishing food, you're properly chewing and everything, then you have a hard time, you know, and it becomes more disease. So she took the young boy to the village pandit, who is respected very much with very high regard. And whatever the village pandit, you know, the brahmana says, people generally accept his advice and follow his advice. So this mother took the child to the village pandit and said, Panditji, you please kindly advise my son not to eat so much sweets. And the Panditji is thinking, yes, that is a very good instruction you must give to your son. You are a very concerned mother. So, the Panditji says, my dear mother, please, come back next week this time. So the woman is wondering, why next week? So, okay. Because she has respect for the village Pandit. So she accepts his instructions. And a week later she comes back with the child. And the Pandit sits the child down and explains to the child, look, it is okay to eat sweets, but with limit, you know, with moderation. So be a good boy and don't eat so much, but eat in moderation. And he tells the mother that don't ban your child from eating sweets, but give him sweets in moderation. And the child says, yes, Panditji, I will follow what you say. And the mother says, yes, I will follow. And then the child runs off to play. And the mother asks the Pandit that you could have said the same instruction last week. The Pandit said, no, I could have not said it because I was also equally attached to eating so many sweets. So for last 1 week, I have given up eating sweets.
And therefore now when I tell the child, I can tell the child with all honesty that you should not eat sweets. Otherwise I would be a hypocrite. So in other words, the Panditji is following first before he is preaching. So when we are presenting this, we have to present this philosophy in such a way that we are first following ourselves. If we ourselves are not following, how can you do justice to giving others? And then the other persons whom you are preaching to, they come to the temple. And then what happens? They are so fired up by the transcendental message of Krishna consciousness. And they are feeling ecstasy of being freed from the anxieties of material world. And here is a shelter where they have come, where they now are in knowledge. And they are participating in the process of bhakti. But then they look around and say, hey, no, wait a minute. I am trying to become this, but these guys who told me that this is what I'm supposed to do, they are not doing it. Huh? What happens? Huh? I'll give one example. There's one fired up brahmachari. You know, he's saying, I am a brahmachari. I'm in the ashram. And, you know, he's very pakka in his dressing and a very good speaker of the scriptures because he's learned, you know, he's an IIT student from one of the prestigious colleges in India. And we were in our Bombay temple. And one young Sindhi boy, coming from a very wealthy family, he was interested in Krishna consciousness. So he was preaching to him. And this young Sindhi boy, because he was well established in terms of wealth and good connections, he had a very beautiful young girlfriend from the cinema industry there. She was among the topmost actresses, but she was in the cinema world. So she was pretty attractive, and everybody was looking to her as a role model. They aspired that I would like to be in the cinema world, those who are aspiring to become actors and actresses. So this brahmachari was preaching to this Sindhi boy, and he's saying, this is all maya. Give her up. And this guy is saying, how can I give her up? You know, we are in love. He said, no. This love business is all maya business. Give it all up. And this young boy, you know, he goes to his girlfriend. He says, look, and I'm following Krishna consciousness. I am becoming a devotee of Lord Krishna. And, you know, I have to give you up. So I have to break up our relationship. So he broke up the relationship with her. And of course, the girl wasn't very happy, but then, of course, she's very young and very beautiful and endowed, and many, many people are already waiting in the queue to take up relationship with her, because it's the nature of this world. If you're not Krishna conscious, then, of course, you have a illusionary world, and you have illusionary desires, and you become connected in this way. So she very quickly found another young man, and she was moved on in her life, and this young boy was regretting every day and going, Hare Krishna, and he moved into the ashram, you know. And then what happened? This fired up brahmachari goes to America to join one of our American ISKCON centers, and there he meets a young, beautiful American girl. He falls in love with her, and he marries her, and he comes back to Bombay, and this Sindhi boy is looking at him. What happened? What happened? He said, you were telling me this girl and maya and marrying and loving, and all this is maya. Hare Krishna is the only thing you have to do. What happened? You went to the land of opportunity and you really took the opportunity. What happened? And this Sindhi boy, he gave up Krishna consciousness because of this person's behavior. Now, of course, we are not promoting this. As Krishna says, Chaturvanya Maya Sristama Guna Karma Vibhagesha, that this in this creation I have created the four varnas and four ashrams. And every one of us will fit into one of these varnas and in these ashrams. And according to those varnas, according to those ashrams, we perform our duties and become elevated in the process of Krishna consciousness. We don't condemn marriages. We don't condemn relationships. We don't become fanatics. This is all part and parcel of Krishna's arrangement. So we say that if you can remain brahmachari for life and dedicate your life to Krishna and Guru, then it is fine. But if you cannot, then become an honest grihastha, live your life as a householder with the household rules, regulations, and promote yourself in the spiritual ladder, and you will make progress. But this young boy, he was so fired up, he came to the movement, and then what happened? Because of this fired up brahmachari, he goes to America and then gets married and comes back, you know, and he has no remorse. So, well, you know, Kali Yuga. So many times I tell our devotees when I'm speaking to them, I say, don't blame Kali Yuga for it. Blame your weakness. Kali Yuga is only doing its duty. You don't have to blame Kali Yuga for it. But it is your weakness which you have to look into and say, it's my weakness, and therefore I follow prayer to the principles of Dharma which I was propagating. Therefore, when we are preaching, we have to be very careful that we don't go and become fanatic preachers, but we become realistic preachers. We give the simple message of Krishna consciousness. That what is Krishna consciousness? Krishna consciousness is opening our eyes to real knowledge, our real position, that we are living entities caught up in this world due to our many past attachments and attraction to this material world. But somehow in this life, by mercy of Prabhupada, by mercy of Krishna, we are getting access to this transcendental knowledge, and therefore this knowledge is there to what? To show us the righteous path, and that is to be freed from further entanglement. And how we can become freed from further entanglement, it is given in the scriptures, in the pages of scriptures. As I said, four varnas, four ashrams are created by the Lord to facilitate the upliftment of a living entity. If you follow this according to the rules and regulations which are promoted in the scriptures, ideally, then you cannot go wrong. And this is what we promote to people. This is what we preach to people. Not become fanatics, and then because of our fanatic preaching, what we do is we destroy that living entity's opportunity to come to Krishna. And we will be doing greatest injustice to Krishna and Prabhupada. Because what is our business? Our business is that since we are recipients of the mercy of Lord Krishna and Prabhupada, that we have come to Krishna consciousness, we embrace Krishna consciousness, and then we do justice by going and giving Krishna consciousness to others in such a way that they do not get disturbed, but they get enlivened to take to Krishna consciousness. And because they become enlivened, they will go and tell another living entity out there suffering that this is the best thing in life. Come and join us. Free yourself from this suffering. Free yourself from this anxiety. But if you become fanatics, then what happens? We don't last too long. We'll be like the shooting star. You know, it comes in the sky, brightness, and then boom, gone, disappeared, oblivion into the whole creation. You don't see it again for many, many, many millenniums. What is the point of that? Better to become like the moon, which is very soothing, very, very refreshing, and it is always there. The moon doesn't loses its shine. Although, you know, the moon goes through its cycles, and the full moon, and then it goes up, you know, down, 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 down. And in Amavasya, there is no moon, but there, at least the physical naked eye, there is no moon. But what we call in our Canada, the new moon. And then gradually again, it begins to build up to the full moon on Purnima. But it doesn't disappear. So we have to become like that. We don't have to become like shooting stars. We have to become sincere and fixed in our devotional service, because somehow we are recipient of Krishna consciousness. So we should embrace this. And I sometimes say that becoming a devotee is not a part-time business. Becoming a devotee is not a short-term occupation. It is not up to the age of retirement. 65, you are a devotee, and after the 65, you say, I'm retired now, so I'm going into retirement, so no more devotee. No, devotee means for life. As soon as your eyes open, as we sing every morning,
by the mercy of the spiritual master, he opens my darkened eyes and fills my heart with transcendental knowledge. So as soon as the spiritual master's mercy is upon you, he opens your darkened eyes, fills your heart with transcendental knowledge, then you are committed to Krishna for life. Not 1 year, not 2 year, not 3 year, not 5 year. For life. And we should be so much endeavoring to be exemplary devotees that through our own endeavors, we encourage others to become perfect and not discourage others. Just like the fire of Brahmachari, you know, preaching very fanatically, and then next thing, you know, he's straying from his path, and then it disturbs the others who have come to Krishna consciousness. And then once you disturb and destroy someone's spiritual life, you are committing a great sin, because you are an act to destroying someone's devotion, someone's opportunity to go back home, back to Godhead. And you are then indebted to that living entity. And God knows how many times you have to keep coming back again and again to purify your own self and to free that living entity whom you have done injustice to. So we have to be very careful that when we are preaching Krishna consciousness, we preach according to our own understanding, but at least what we are practicing ourselves and not beyond that. And present it in a very palatable way that we do not destroy other people's faith in this. So, of course, it is very important that we take the message of Srimad Bhagavatam very seriously, but we do not look at it in negative points, because sometimes there are certain points which are in the pages of Bhagavatam are very, very, you can say, controversial from our perspective. But from the Bhagavatam's perspective, it is not controversial at all. But because we see things in a different way, therefore we think it is controversial, and therefore we sometimes are shying away from presenting Srimad Bhagavatam as it is, or we try to modify it, you know. So just, you know, I don't want to get into the controversy of it, but there was some talk of changing certain aspects from the Srimad Bhagavatam's purpose, what Prabhupada is saying, that it should become politically correct. So it is not saying things as it is, but it is more palatable for the general masses. So we should change, you know, some of the comments they say are sexist, you know, and therefore you should change them. Now, nothing can be changed. What a pure devotee speaks is as it is, but we have to change our perception and our understanding. And when we have a clear understanding, then there is no controversy. The only controversy that arises when we have misconception, and therefore we see it as a controversial point, and then we promote it like that and become ourselves illusioned, and then we put others into illusion, and that is not our business. Our business is to be enlightened and to enlighten. So on that point, I will stop here. If anybody has any comments, any questions, please feel free. Thank you very much.